A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Some exchange betting companies run short-lived promotions, like month-long offers of low commission. At BetDak, we wanted to change the way we did things, so we set our commission at 2% permanently. That's 2% on football, horse racing, golf, almost any sport. 2%. That's just one way that BetDak is changing for the better. For the better. Like you. BetDak, the 2% commission exchange.
Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Report Extra podcast. We normally only cover league games, as you know, but it's going to be a little while until our next one, which is a bit weird in League One. It seems like we're playing every other week, but we've got actually quite a big game on Tuesday. I wouldn't normally consider it a big game because I think the whole competition's been a bit weird, but whenever you're two games away from like Wembley, I suppose you need to start looking at things seriously. And we've got another under-21s team. Now, we're just off the back of a 1-1 draw with Scunthorpe. I'm actually recording this on a Saturday night, so I've had one or two, which is not my usual, but nonetheless, it is Saturday night. And with us, I've got Gavin, who's a bit of an expert on Manchester City's reserves and academy, and the fantastically named, what is it, Elite Development Squad, Gavin, is that right?
Elite Development Squad, that's right, yes.
Absolutely love that name. It sounds brilliant. I love it. But yeah, you're an expert on them pretty much. You write for, or your Twitter handle is MCFC Reserves and Academy, which it's what pulled me in, to be honest. And I want to kick off straight away with, obviously, if you cover a lot of the reserves and the academy, everyone has their opinion of the Checkered Trade Trophy, especially Sunderland. But for Manchester City under 21s, you've done all right. But what's your view on it as a City fan?
Well, I'm firmly in the camp that these young lads need a lot more games than they're getting at the moment, because the Reserve League is an absolute mess. Because without City being in the UEFA Youth League and this Checkered Trade Trophy, they can go virtually 4 weeks without a game, and it's just an absolute farce. These young lads need to be playing regularly to aid the developments. And the fact is that even with those games, they're under-19s, and with the Youth League and it's an under-23, there's a mishmash of the ages, and so they've got to swap and change with the squads. So they really need sort of a weekly game league fixture system, like the old sort of Central League, with a sort of, if possible, a promotion and relegation system, because they're just not getting the chances to play in the Premier League, because the managers can obviously see that they're not developing well enough in the Reserve League, because they're not getting the game time. So for them to be put into the scenario of these big Premiership games, it's so much of a risk for the managers, even just the odd one. When, you know, like City, without Fernandinho, it cost them a couple of games around the Christmas period. But I do feel, obviously, that a B League is obviously totally against what a lot of people think.
Yeah.
But there's got to be something around there to be done to help these youngsters progress better than what they are, without having to go out on loan all the time. They need to be developed within house in their own environment, I think, better than they are at the minute.
No, it's funny when you should say that, because I suppose the, and you know what, I'm always going to say, coming from, it's very easy to have a judgment on Man City, Chelsea and the youth academy and the reserve teams and things like that. It's really, really easy coming from a Sunderland perspective, or even like a, say, a West Ham perspective, like a mid-table Premiership club. But I think our answer to a lot of the B team side of things and the Checker Trade Trophy having under 21 sides in would be, why can't these players develop away on loan? I've spoke to a few sort of former professionals who played maybe 10, 15 years ago who speak really highly of going lower down the leagues and kind of learning their trade and stuff like that. But why is it that it seems like Manchester City and, say, teams like Chelsea are not able to develop the players by sending them to, say, League One or a League Two team? Why do you think it's more beneficial that the under-21s enter the Checker Trade Trophy as opposed to maybe going on loan to someone like, say, Rochdale, Bolton, somebody like that?
I think, obviously, these are great smaller clubs and do a fine job. But their whole style of football and ethos is so totally different to what a Premier League club like City and the likes of Chelsea, and the way that they control possession and everything else. And it's not just about making the forward pass all the time. It's making the right judgment to create the space further down the line, like sort of playing chess, isn't it? You just drawing your opponent out to create that space. And I think that quite often, though, the players that have developed within their own the cities and Chelsea's academies and stuff, they're not used to that style of football, and then suddenly they can get sidelined and put on the bench quite quickly, and then they're not again getting the game time, and they're not thinking. And because I think the way that football's changed in these last 10 or 15 years or so, I don't hold anything that, oh, you've got to play with men, that'll make you a better player. I think because men in football, you can't go diving in anymore, so that whole aspect of being tackled by a hard man midfielder is gone anyway. So I think, as I said, I think the way to go is more to expand the reserve league. So they're playing like virtually every week, possibly even more, you know, with cup games and other things included. So they have the rigours of playing week in, week out, and they have to ride out those niggles and stuff that they don't have to now, because they get the more time rest, but they're not having to deal with that pressure of getting themselves ready for a game every week. It's bizarre at the minute.
So, as opposed to being in favour of the teams going into the Checker Trade, you probably, in an ideal world, prefer kind of a switch back to what I suppose me and you were used to when the reserve teams were about. There was a little bit more at stake, wasn't there? The reserve games now seem a little bit throwaway. You don't really, the whole relegation promotion thing, you don't really hear about who's going when and doing what. But I suppose another argument you could have for that, and it's probably the volume of players that teams like City and Chelsea have in their youth academies, because the top teams in Europe and the top teams in the world, such as City and such as Chelsea at the moment, will take on a big raft of players based on potential. But I suppose you can look at someone like Jadon Sancho, for example, who's now turning up for England, doing fantastically well at Borussia Dortmund. And there's a few players that have gone over to Germany and done relatively similar, and they haven't really been given a chance to get into a team like Manchester City. Do you think there's also danger of these academy squads like City's, and I keep saying City's, Chelsea's, but there's also Manchester United, any of the top six, kind of overload themselves a little bit too much with the youngsters, and some just don't get the chance, and maybe they'd prefer to go out on loan so they can really show what they have got?
Yeah, obviously there's that element of it, but you see, City have a quite a good structure in the way that they're dealing with that sort of overloading, and they've geared a sort of sell-on system where they're making money from the academy, which will then self-fund it, and then obviously had to help to purchase more developed players down the line at the present time. But obviously, I think they would obviously like to be in the situation, I'd say, where these youngsters are developing in a better system than it is at the moment. But there's the way that they've recruited from the younger ages and they've dealt with them moving on has been far better than the likes of Chelsea, who find themselves having maybe the odd sort of Loftus-Cheek or Callum Hudson-Odoi, who will just boost it up. But the rest of them, who are very good players, they don't really seem to be making any sort of serious money from, whereas City have, in these last couple of years, have been able to market them through their agents a lot better and gain some good value from them. So,
yeah, most definitely. And I think, you know, it's easy to point the finger and say about sort of Jadon Sancho, for example, but you've got progression of someone like Phil Foden, who's doing really well. You might not be getting in the team every week, but he's a name that's now known across the Premiership. So there is players coming through. I was researching the under-21 side. I've started doing a little piece where I picked three players that were sort of the key men to look at. And it was a bit of a research program for me when it comes to Man City under-21s. You've got the ones that stick out, like I think Luke Bolton stuck out to me. Pervedo stuck out to me as well. But then I read about this young boy who you couldn't officially sign until August because he was only 15. And he's just turned 16. He came on against Rochdale and scored two goals. Like, it's frightening, isn't it, how you can look at a 16-year-old player and they could potentially cause problems for a team like ourselves in this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're talking about Jadon Braff there. He's literally only one day from being a schoolboy. If he was born a day later, he'd be a schoolboy still. So he would fit into the under-16s because obviously 31st of August, the English system is dated from the 1st of September. Your age is counted from. That's another point that I have a bugbear about, why England is not part of the rest of the world that dates their players from the 1st of January. So it makes it harder for them to bring England new squads to them to be picked, because they come from two different ages half the time, because obviously quite a lot of academies tend to try and find players that are born between September and December, because they tend to be bigger and more physical for that same age, because they're a few months older, aren't they? So
yeah, of course.
But going back to then when they for England, then they're actually the younger in that younger ages in that year, because the older ones are from the January, not from the September and October, such like. But the scouting system within the city to pick up these 16-year-olds and so on, that they can be brought in from Europe, which obviously may change quite dramatically once Brexit. So, obviously there's a big recruitment process for within England, and obviously, like say, City just signed Ben Knight as well from Ipswich Town as well. He's still a schoolboy as well, so he's played a little part in the Chequer Trade Trophy. He's been on the bench. He's not started any of the games though. So I mean, I just jotted down that we've had 24 different starters in our Chequer Trade Trophy run. There's only one player that's played all five games.
So. Is that Pervedo?
No, it's Ogbeita.
Oh, okay. Because when I was looking through sort of the sides, again, like I say, I mean, I'm sure I'm not embarrassing myself here by saying I didn't know a great deal about City's under-21s. Their first team, maybe so, but they're under-21s. I didn't know a huge deal apart from, I think, Luke Bolton was the one that really sort of stuck out to me at that point. But when I was looking through your team, I wouldn't say you've chopped and changed, but it's not been a standard team the whole way through. And you've played some pretty good teams for like the standard. I think the best side I've
seen. Exactly. I mean, we drew Barnsley.
Yeah.
Which is obviously, yourselves and Barnsley were the two top sides in the north. So if City do manage to progress, then we've sort of we've beaten the two best sides in the north section of the group. So, but I mean, I know obviously Barnsley did change a few players, but obviously it was the third goal for City where it came out from the back was just
it's ridiculous. I've seen that.
It's a sublime goal. Yeah.
And I think that's a good point you made before. Sorry to sort of interject, but you're saying before, because I was very much of the opinion of players should go out on loan. I don't want under 21 teams in there. I think, you know what, it's been poisoned a little bit by the fact that we had to play Newcastle under 21s. There is an element of embarrassment with that, of course. I don't think anyone would deny that. I think if we were playing City under 21s and not Newcastle, people wouldn't have. They still have strong opinions about it, but maybe not as much. And I think attendances across the tournament kind of shows that people are not too happy about it. And my thoughts were, you know, maybe for them to go out on loan. But I think it is a really good point that if you keep them in-house to learn to play a certain way of football, and if you can mould a player at that age to score goals like you did against Barnsley, like you're not necessarily, no offence to say Rochdale, for example, I'm just thinking of a League One team that's obviously near Manchester, but you're not going to get that kind of goal. You're not going to get that kind of play. You could change the development of someone. So from a flip side, you could say, yes, it does hinder the likes of Sunderland, it hinders the likes of Rochdale, because when it was a Johnson's Paint Trophy, it's a realistic chance for like a lower level team, although we're quite new to being lower level, getting to Wembley for a meaningful trophy by having to beat under 21 teams on the way. But if you're a Man City, if you're a Chelsea, then obviously you're going to want your players to play in a certain way. And especially someone like Pep Guardiola, if he's underpinning everything. I mean, I remember when we had Gus Poyet here and he wanted to implement a certain style of football, and he was implementing it across every team, the under 23s, the main team. And then, all right, Gus Poyet, it's very different to Guardiola, but it's a similar mindset that he wanted every unit of every team to play in a similar way. And there is the argument that getting kicked up a height by someone who's 34 years old and 6'4" is not going to give them any more development than staying with or playing in the Checker Trade Trophy and playing the way that your main manager, the guy who underpins everything and the whole ethos of your team, in lads you're going to be hopefully playing next to you for the next 5-10 years. So I think it does raise a good point. It's maybe not something that we want to teams in the Checker Trade Trophy that aren't under 21 teams maybe want to admit to you, but I think it does raise a good point that sometimes keeping it in-house and playing in the style that you want to play is better for the future of the first team, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that obviously they can showcase themselves on a sort of slightly larger scale in front of fairly decent crowds compared to the reserve league crowds, which are obviously ridiculously small. Then it does add some, and the fact that we played Rochdale, because it was quite a local game, City Mac took quite a fairly decent away following, which obviously we were cheering on the sidelines, and I think that added to the young lads' ethos within the game, that they could push on and they had the crowds backing, and then obviously when we scored the fourth, that Taylor Richards just ran over and celebrated in front of the fans, and it was a real, you could see there was a real buzz about him and the team being able to do that. So there's that element that the Checker Trade does add, but obviously it's strange that we're seeing that it's just ourselves getting to this point, you know, which does show perhaps that these reserve leagues it's not developing the young lads, is it? Because let's say the League Ones and is there any League Two teams left in it? Port Vale, yeah. So they've got more about them than the reserve league players that they're facing. So,
and I think one big thing as well, and again, it's, I think probably the best club side of my generation, I'm 32, off the top of my head, is probably Barcelona when they had Guardiola and it was Messi, Iniesta, Xavi. And they, I mean, especially Xavi and Iniesta, they came all the way through the ranks from the under 16s, the under teens, the B team, and the way that they do it in Spain, all up to the first team. And there was just like that kind of understanding, which was like telepathic between them, wasn't there? I suppose Guardiola will be wanting that. He's not going to want to differentiate from what was essentially the best side in Europe, 10 years ago? He's not going to want to go to City and change that idea. So I can understand why he would be for that. But he seems to be quite adamant that he wants this B League. Do you think that's just what he's used to? Because I don't understand the B team thing.
Yeah, I think the trouble was is that when he took over the B side, I think it was working quite well within Spain for the likes of Barcelona. They were doing quite well. But in his last few years, these B League teams are not doing half as well, are they?
No.
They've dropped down to the third divisions, haven't they? And even when we've played Barcelona in the youth league, I didn't see a huge difference in the quality, even though obviously I would say that our team wasn't that great. But yet Barcelona, you know, although they did beat us a couple of times, but if we'd have finished a little bit better, yeah, we could have quite easily won as well. It was just the old goal in it, and I thought, you know, maybe, you know, there's something wrong in that system as well. But that's why I think that a reserve league that has over 30 games a season, where they are playing against really fit young lads, where there's relegation and promotion involved, and cups as well, and different things, I think there could be some real benefit to that. And obviously any of the ones that are playing reasonably well, there is still that option of the loans to clubs as well, because you're going to get a lot of other clubs watching these games, aren't you, with their scouts, and thinking, hang on, you know, maybe, you know, there's an option to bring in a talented young lad. And because I think at the minute there's they don't send half the amount of scouts that they used to. When I go to the games, you can see they know that the quality of the players and stuff, they're not going to see enough now. But whereas, like, I think if there's those extra games and they can see some real development, they're going to think, oh yeah, we need to be watching this player. He might do for us and stuff. But
it's definitely changed, even from, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm old, but it's definitely changed from when I was younger, like in my sort of maybe mid-teens and stuff like that. The reserve league was like a proper league where you could, yeah, you could win stuff, and you could. I remember Sunderland's youth team. I'm not sure we won the league, and we did quite well when we had, I think it was the likes of like George McCartney and the likes of, I want to say, Michael Proctor, Thomas Butler, and all who went on to have maybe not illustrious careers, but, you know, they all played in the Premiership, I think, at some point. So it's definitely changed with that. And I think what maybe takes the shine off the Checkatrade Trophy as well for maybe fans of like a club like Sunderland, if this was the Johnson's Paint Trophy and we were playing, say, I'll pick a team off the top of my head, Oxford, in the quarterfinal, I'd probably be really up for it, even though realistically we'd probably be playing lesser quality of opposition. And I think it makes it less exciting for a fan of, say, Sunderland, Barnsley, Rochdale, whoever it may be, to play an under-21 team. But I suppose on the flip side, because Man City have so many different avenues of where they're chasing silverware, and they're such a huge club now with such a massive infrastructure, totally different to the Man City I knew growing up, and definitely probably the Man City that you knew growing up as well. How do the fans take these sort of tournaments? Because I remember when Sunderland were in the Checkatrade Trophy, because we fell down that fast, we managed to go from having our first team to our under-21 team in the competition. And I remember just not really caring. But because City have such an infrastructure, do the fans care a little bit more about the under-21 side and how they're doing, or is it quite hard for you to generate excitement as well?
Well, obviously the first group games are all away. So there is obviously a following probably from the more locally based fans from that club that they're playing. But there's no, I don't think there's any sort of real following from Manchester. There's probably about 20 or 30 of us that go to the games pretty regularly, and obviously you've got all the friends and family you see there all the time. So, it's not. I think it doesn't help because of the fact that how bad the reserve league is. I think it doesn't help generate any interest in the Chequered Trade Trophy games. Plus, City are very bad at actually sort of promoting these young games because, quite frankly, they don't want to have to deal with the crowds at the stadium and stuff, the extra costs and the stewarding and other things involved. I mean, if we'd have drawn yourself at home, I'd like to say you'd probably want to bring 3,000 fans, possibly. I don't know. You know?
Yeah, so, I mean, we took 1,000 to Morecambe, so
so there's no way that our call the mini had could deal with that sort of level of away following. It would have probably have to be moved to the main stadium, and obviously the City did, for some reason, they just, a lot of the youth stuff, they just don't want to push it forward as something that's part of the big ethos within the club that you should be following all the time. It's also a side issue for people to go and watch, really, which is a shame because the young lads, you know, I'm sure they'd love to be playing in front of far bigger crowds and be cheered on. But as I say, the whole system of the reserve league is probably not helping that out.
And it's also difficult. Club. I suppose from a City fans perspective, like, I mean, I travel from Glasgow to each home game, the majority. I go to an average about at least 6 away games a year. I'm already on 4 this year, and that's quite a bit of money, a bit of travelling. If you factor in Man City, you've got the League Cup, you've got the FA Cup, which both of which you have a chance of winning or getting to the later stages when you'd want to go. You've got stuff like European games, Champions League. You've got the homes, the aways. There's so many games. Like, I suppose if I was a City fan, my list of priorities for, i.e. the Chequered Trade Trophy, would be pretty low down my, where do I spend my money? And I suppose it's difficult to tell someone else because you're a city in the north of England, very much like ourselves. We're not like the South, where we're like loaded with cash and can afford £1,000 season ticket like Arsenal, and we don't all have flush jobs. We're pretty not everyone, you know. I'm sure there's a differentiation, but in general, we all go to the football and we're all like working class people. And I think if you're traveling abroad to like right, left, and centre, the under 21s and the Chequered Trade Trophy weight is something that's not where your money's going to be going. So I suppose it's also really difficult to convince a City fan to be like, go to the Champions League, go to the League Cup, go to the Liverpool in the league and Anfield in here, and then also go to Sunderland for the under 21. So I suppose it makes it quite difficult at the same time for you as well. But it's, I think what makes it the weirdest thing for me about the whole entire competition is probably just how fast we've fallen. Like I say, we had an under 21 team in it ourselves only a couple last season, actually, I think. We were playing Man City not that long ago. We were beating Man City not that long ago.
Yeah. And I've been up to Appleton Colliery quite a few times, and we've lost.
I mean, I'm still remembering it. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago. We were beating you 1-0 in the league every other season when Mancini was in charge and G was scoring in the last minute and stuff like that.
Yeah. It was. There was a bit of naughtiness as we left the ground after that.
Oh yeah,
that game, because they felt like obviously that he'd scored a huge game, but it was a huge thingy. But there were a bit of too much bravado, I think. After there was more stuff that went on, but obviously, you know, I think back in the day when we were so low, you know, to beat anyone top, you lose your head
massive.
A little bit.
And I think the only thing, the most frustrating thing I think about when I think of Manchester City these days, it's not the fact that, you know, you were the lucky bastards that got all that money and turned into a good side and all that sort of stuff. It's the fact that I still attest to this day that Yaya Toure's shot at Wembley was not a shot, it was a bloody cross. 100% that was a bloody cross.
I don't think you can say either way. I don't know.
You don't know, do you?
No.
I think one thing I was quite interested in was when it comes to City, you said yourself beforehand, you've been a season ticket holder for, 30 plus years. One thing that really got me with City after Wembley, I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated that we lost, because it was the first time I got to see my team at Wembley. I went to the semis, the quarters, and the whole run was just, for me, it lived with me forever. And it was the League Cup. And I felt like a lot of City fans, especially maybe the younger ones, the lads in their 20s, they were kind of just, they were so nonplussed by winning the League Cup. And it really frustrated me. But then I had to kind of try and put my sensible head on and think, well, where are Man City at and where does this rank? Like, how do you adjust? And I know it's been a few seasons now, but how do you adjust from being essentially strugglers, very, very similar to Sunderland, a bit yo-yo-y at one point mid-90s, to suddenly being probably one of the biggest clubs in Europe outside of, say, Barcelona and Real Madrid, probably? Like, how does that adjustment happen? And how do you still get yourselves up for going to Wembley again and again and again? And I know it sounds really stupid, and there's people probably listening to me think, well, you can always get up for going to Wembley. But that was just the feeling I got from City fans, that it was just another trophy. And that there's part of me that would never want that. Do you know what I mean?
I'm so disappointed if that's how people were, because I certainly am not the case. I went to 7 quarterfinals without ever seeing a semi-final since I started following till we got to the semi-final against United in the FA Cup, and I just relish every single time that we get further in these competitions. I absolutely love it, and I get a real buzz from it, and I don't think I'll ever lose that. And I'm fortunate that I can get to all of these games, and I appreciate every time that I get to see my team at this level, because it could go any one time. I just think, pinch yourself. I'm already watching this.
It's a stuff of dreams, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, let's say it's not just winning the trophies. It's the style and everything about the football. Like at this moment in time, I think my favourite player is Edison, because he's just such a maverick goalkeeper. It's just so exciting to see him and what he can do to help the team beat another team. Because of the way he just releases the ball and finds a player, and it's bizarre.
And the scary thing is, like, I mean, I watch Match of the Day every single week, and I watch if football's on, I'll watch it. And City are one of those teams that are really nice to watch. Simply put, they're just a good team to watch. And I love Fernandinho. I just think he underpins so much good stuff about Man City. And I love watching Aguero. He's so aggressive, but so talented. And I think De Bruyne's he's a total workhorse with genuine, undeniable, world-class talent. But the scary thing is, I was watching like your under-21 players, and they're not as good, but they're going to be as good. You've got these like 16-year-old kids that are just demolishing League One defenders. Like, and that is terrifying. Like, maybe not for you, but for us. Because you're watching teams like City and how good they are, and you've just got these ready-made kids just that can just step up alongside this huge wad of cash that could just buy a player for 70, 80 million if you really, really wanted to do it, alongside a full ethos and potentially the best manager on the planet at the minute. It's like, I don't know. It's the stuff of dreams, and it's the thing that every club says, oh, I hope we get taken over the way that Man City did. I hope that happens to us. But there's not many teams that have done it. Maybe Chelsea, but Chelsea were doing it right at the time as well. City just came up from like absolutely nowhere, realistically, or mid-table Premiership, I think, more or less at the time. And then I remember Robinho was the first signing. And then it just sort of spiraled from there. But
I love it that...
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
The year before we were taken over, we had the previous takeover by Thatsk and Shinawatra, and obviously he proposed, he was
going to
put a load of money in, and we had Sven as our manager.
God, but, so you did.
But all his money got taken away, Thatskin, and our old owner and directors had to bail him out to pay the players because there was no money. So he sort of bankrolled something that the money that wasn't there. So he was, in that aspect, he wasn't fit for purpose. And I had some shares in City, and I held on all to the last minute where I had to relinquish them. Because I knew I didn't want him at the club, and I knew we would be sold down the river. But it didn't eventually mean that he had to sell, and the Sheikh Mansour and everything around his adult royal family and stuff was able to purchase City. And it was a bit of a bobby start with Mark Hughes and his charge, but once he went and Mancini was brought in, we've never looked back.
Oh, I mean, I'll always be a Sunderland fan. I don't really have too much of an affiliation elsewhere, but I think there's kind of a sort of a bond between Sunderland and City fans. I think because of how well we did getting on with each other at Wembley, but I think the biggest thing for me was when you won the league and Aguero scored in the last minute and we all did the Poznan. That's riled Manchester United forevermore. And if all you've got to do is scour Twitter, and they still talk about the revenge and all that sort of stuff. It's like, lads, we beat you in a semi-final. We beat you in the league a season later or two seasons later. Like, I hate Man United and I always will. And I'm quite happy to say that on a recorded message or on a recorded podcast. I've never liked Manchester United. I've never liked the arrogance of it. Admired, yes, never really liked them. But I think there's... You must have seen that, and I really hope that kind of added to your day as well, the fact that we did the Poznan, because they've never forgotten that.
I mean, it was sort of a very slow motion there in my brain when the goal was scored. I'm saying, has that actually gone in? Has he crossed the line? Was he offside? Well, you know, it took about 10 or 15 seconds for it to actually go in, that we had scored, and obviously they celebrated wildly. But it still didn't actually go into me that we'd won the league until I went away with my wife about 3 or 4 days after the season finished, and about midway through the holiday, I just sat up from the sunbed and said, "We've won the league."
it just
suddenly clicked, and I went, "We win the Champions League," because for going so long without not seen us win anything, like say getting to quite a few quarterfinals and just never getting any further, and I've seen so many relegations and a few promotions as well along the way, but it was such a sublime feeling. And as I say, I hate the arrogance of any football fan. no, just United, but Chelsea, anyone. No, I still hold this belief that no club has any divine right to be anywhere.
No.
They're because they do it on the football pitch, not because of the size of the club. It's what they produce on the pitch. You know, and obviously it's great that some small clubs like Bournemouth are there in the Premiership. That's fantastic. You know, it's got to give some hope to some of the smaller clubs that if they're run right and they've found a nice, good young manager like Eddie Howe is, and they can make their way up the league like that. You know,
and
like
I say,
Bournemouth fans must be pinching themselves all the time as well, mustn't they? That they're seeing, you know, some top players, and they've got some top players themselves.
They certainly have that
they're seeing week in, week out there, you know, in their club. That's why I said I appreciate everything that's there, and I feel sorry for the fans that just
you've never experienced the bad times.
they don't have that sort of joy that you get from seeing great football and winning things, because you felt such real low within yourself when you felt come home and you thought, oh God, what am I doing? Why am I still supporting that club? But then you're there the next week because you know that's in your heart. It's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, no real choice. And I can tell you that was something for nothing. So just to sort of finish off, I suppose, what I would ask is, of course, I'd like a prediction for Tuesday, see what you think, how it's going to go. But who's the one player we should watch out for? Who's the one player that could do damage to our team, basically?
That's the thing, isn't it? Because, as I say, we've used 24 starters, and I don't... I, don't know who he's gonna pick, but the one player that that when we played on Friday night in the Youth Cup and we absolutely battered Nottingham Forest was Felix Nemecha, and I think if he plays like he did on Friday, he could be a real threat for you because he's such a tall, rangy player who knows how to use his long legs, nip balls away when you just don't think how's he done that, you know. And then he's got such a great touch, he clicks and everything, and if he finds his shooting boots as well, you know, he can ping one in from 30 yards no problem. So yeah, I think if he plays, he might be the one to watch.
And what's your thoughts for the result? How do you see it going?
I think this may be a game too far for us, and I think you're going to beat us 3-1.
I'll take that. I'll go with you on it, actually. I'm going to agree. I want to say 3-1. Inject a bit of confidence. I said 1-1 for the Scunthorpe game today, and I was bloody well right.
Yeah.
so hopefully my streak keeps going, and we get a little bit closer to Wembley, because you might remember how much we enjoyed Wembley last time if you were around for the weekend.
Yeah.
Covent Garden might sell out of their drink again, and I quite fancy that. But thanks for popping on, mate. I really appreciate you doing it. It's been really interesting to have a chat with something maybe I don't feel like I know too much about, and it's been nice to have a chat about City and how you've developed as a club from probably where you were sort of 10, 15 years ago. And it's quite interesting to speak about something that's completely not our domain anymore, but hopefully will be within 10 years' time. So if anyone wants to buy us, there's a very good documentary on Netflix you can watch called Something Till I Die, which you can watch, you can fall in love with, and then inject your billions of pounds into us if you so wish. And I'm sure Stuart Donald will set the aside if we have a billionaire. He's more than welcome to do. If not, you know, that's fine. We'll plow on with League One because we are enjoying it. But thanks for coming on, Gav. Have a good rest of the night. Are you going on Tuesday?
I'm going to try to one of my mates, he's got a funeral to go to. He's hoping it was going to be earlier in the day. Yeah. So there's just probably the two of us. But then there's obviously the weather aspect as well. If there's heavy snow and stuff, I don't even want to contemplate even trying to get up there. And then
might have to wear a coat if it's snowing.
well, I'm in the bizarre camp. I wear shorts all year, all games. I'm stood on the sidelines watching the under-18s, and especially somewhere like Newcastle's a camp. I mean, where you're up on a bank and the wind's howling straight on your legs. It's
perfect.
That's one of my foibles.
No, not a problem. What I'll say is I hope you have a really poor Tuesday in terms of results.
Yeah.
Enjoy the rest of your season. I'd always prefer you to win it over probably anyone else up there, if I'm completely honest with you. And I genuinely mean that. Again, never been a big fan of United, as I think I've attested to on this podcast. But thanks for popping on, mate. Have a good night. Enjoy match of the day. I'm going to have another amaretto and orange juice and drink myself slowly into a stupor, I think.
Great, Graham. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Gavin. Have a good one, mate.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
So that was fun. I thought I'd do a little extra podcast because it's going to be a while before we have a league game. So I did want to do it, if I'm completely honest with you. And I thought it would be interesting to speak to someone who's essentially like an expert on Manchester City's elite development squad. What a name. It's such an American sort of movie name, isn't it? Fucking ridiculous. But I thought it was good to speak about how Man City are, as a football club at the moment, it's that you're a club I kind of have time for, if I'm honest with you. Kind of in a similar ilk to Everton, I suppose. It's just something that I've always quite admired about them, I guess, even though they've done quite well. And I certainly prefer them to anyone else that's up there. And they're a great team to watch from their first team's perspective. And I'm sure their under-21s are not bad either. And I really think we've got a tough game on Tuesday. But I do think it's maybe one step too far. They're the last under-21 team there. I'd like to think we can get past this. And I do think we can get Wembley with this. And I do want to win it. I'm not going to deny that. Not just for a day at Wembley. A trophy is a trophy in the trophy cabinet at the end of the day. This is the level we're at. It's a trophy that we can go for. It's a trophy that I can go towards and win. So why not go for it? Why not win it? There's no shame in winning a trophy, no matter which level you're at, especially when you're in League One, if that's the challenge you have. Let's go for it. Why not? But thanks for checking in. I never thought I'd be doing a Manchester City under 21s extra podcast, but here we are. This is what we're at. No shame in that. Enjoy your Monday night, Tuesday night. I hope work hasn't been too hard whenever this is coming out. I'm going to, like I say, drink myself into a stupor, a bit more amaretto and orange juice, and watch Match of the Day. Thanks, lads. Bye-bye.
Some exchange betting companies run short-lived promotions, like month-long offers of low commission. At BetDak, we wanted to change the way we did things, so we set our commission at 2% permanently. That's 2% on football, horse racing, golf, almost any sport. 2%. That's just one way that BetDak is changing for the better. For the better. Like you. BetDak, the 2% commission exchange.
Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.